This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Live your best life on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Great to have you with us as we listen back to the free clinics, the experts, your stories and more. And something of a health emphasis right here as we discuss dust mites and allergies with Dr. Rania from Circle Care Clinic. More common than you might think. So if you are suffering from a stuffy nose, congestion, coughing and sneezing, you might need to look to your beds. How often should we be washing our sheets and even changing our pillow? Dr. Rania was on hand to help. And while I'm frankly amazed that anyone has time to do anything in terms of infidelity right now, apparently cheating spouses are in the up on 2020. So Dr. Thuraya, clinical psychologist from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, was lifting the lid specifically on why women cheat. Are those reasons different to why men cheat? She was sharing her experiences of marriage counselling here in the UAE and answering your questions too. And having a bit of a small business focus, Shona Hind didn't go to university, went on to become very successful in the corporate world, but after tragedy decided to turn her life around and look to a more entrepreneurial spirit. She shared her successes, her learnings, her failures, and what she's got planned with her brand new venture.
Healthy Habits
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Now, you can't see them, you can't feel them, but they are in your home and in your bed, possibly by the millions. No, it's not the trailer for a new horror film. We are talking dust mites, and anyone who sleeps on a mattress with pillows is likely sharing their bed with massive colonies of microscopic dust mites, which feed primarily on dead human skin cells, depositing their waste that can not only build up, but trigger human allergies as well. I'd like to be joined on the line by Dr. Rania, specialist paediatrician and founder medical director at Circle Care Clinic. Dr. Rania, it does sound like a horror film, I have to say. They're in our home. I just want to, before I get to my questions, I just want to read out a message we had in earlier, which I think is really valuable because this is something that does seem to be affecting an awful lot of people. We had a message from Alia saying, I just want to share our experience. My son is very allergic to house dust mites, and this is what I have done. Zip protectors on mattress, pillow and duvet, deep vacuum weekly, take ages going around rugs, wash linens at 60 degrees, keep surfaces uncluttered if possible, wipe them down with a damp cloth. I try but often forget to put cuddly toys in the freezer for 24 hours once a week to kill the mites. I know it sounds extreme, but it really has helped. What do you get into clinic in this respect? Is it perhaps more than we might realise?
I mean, honestly, it's one of the most common symptoms people come in with, this nasal congestion, mouth breathing, snoring overnight. And children have such small nasal passages, they seem to be quite prone to it. And it is the dreaded dust mites at the, you know, at the base of all of this. And you're absolutely right. She's the sort of the caller who sent the message is absolutely right. Doing all those things, those are really effective. And we spend most of our consultations educating people on de-dusting and how important it is to minimize the stuffed toys, to look at your bedding, to look at the methods of cleaning you're applying and get rid of it. Because yes, we can treat the symptoms, but prevention is obviously so much better than cure. So if you can go and get that dust mite, minimize the numbers, you're definitely in a better place.
So coughing, sneezing, runny nose, watery eyes, all symptoms of allergies caused by dust mites and their byproducts, which I'm glad Karen introduced me to as a phrase rather than feces. But in some patients, the impact can be more serious.
Absolutely. So you get so many patients have disturbed sleep. It can be as bad as to cause sleep apnea. This is where you're sort of snoring quite badly and you obstruct your airway to have moments where you're not taking breaths in, and then suddenly, you know, you start breathing again. This can lead, if this happens over a period of months and years, this can lead to you sort of oxygenate less while you're asleep. And for school children, let's say, and adults, for all of us, it can lead to reduced performance during the day. So for us adults, you know, we can get this groggy feeling, this feeling where we're slightly more sleepy than we should, headaches, sort of sinus congestion, reduced performance, as I said, at schools and at work. And then that daytime somnolence where you suddenly sort of doze off when you're not meant to. And at the base of it is where your nasal, we are by nature. We are obligate nasal breathers. We are meant to breathe through our nose, leave our mouth closed. This this is quite protective because then our mouths aren't open to get infections, and you know our teeth remain clean and all of that. So when your nose is blocked because you're breathing in something that triggers an allergic reaction, then by default your brain tells your mouth to open to get those breaths in, and this is where you end up with the snoring and the mouth breathing and the restless sleep and then so on and so forth. And yes, early morning, blocked nose, coughing, a nasal congestion. You see those people, named children, sort of rubbing their noses up and down, adults touching their nose all the time, and especially through the period we're going through now with COVID, we want to obviously avoid these things even more. So, our interest is into decongesting that nose through all the methods that we talk about and just improving sleep quality, which then essentially improves your daytime life.
Can you tell us how often should we be changing our sheets?
So at least once a week. Once a week, I think, is fair.
And then what about buying new bedding, complete replacement?
So to begin with, the choice of bedding is important. So those lovely down duvets and lovely feather pillows are probably the completely wrong choice because, yes, feathers, well, we know feathers are organic. They're the equivalent of hair for a duck or a goose. But organic material disintegrates into dust. So that increases the likelihood of the dust mite presence even more than just the 10%. And I read some statistic a while ago about how 2 years into the life of a lovely down duvet or a lovely feather pillow, it's a significant percentage of it, so 20, 30% of it is dust. So once you think that, so I think begin with the choice of bedding. So this is where synthetic, non-natural is probably better in terms of the stuffing that goes into your pillows or into your duvets, because dust mites are less likely to live on those and then are just waiting for your lovely skin cells to fall into them, which is where the sheet changing comes in. And then how often to change your bedding? I would say it's fairly reasonable to change a pillow once every 2 years. I mean, with mattresses, if we did that, we'd probably be broke if we had to change them as often. Yeah. But I think if we cleaned our bedding deeply, sufficiently, we could, our beddings, you know, these mattresses you buy that have sort of 10-year warranties on them. So I think the main approach here should be cleaning and how deeply and properly, you know, we clean it and, you know, just keep those dust mites out.
Going to the text line, Dr. Rania, Liesl's been in touch saying, coincidentally, I've been to the doctor today and they suggested a dust mite allergy for our son who's 3 years. Coughing, sore throat, tiredness, which leads to naughtiness, doesn't it just? Anyway, I've just ordered Zip mattress protectors and duvet protectors. Should we try the dust allergy spray? I'm worried that these could chemically do more harm. What do you think?
So is this the dust allergy spray?
Yeah, that you put on the bedding.
On the bedding. I mean, I would probably start with cleaning the bedding out and using the Zip covers prior to the spray. Just because you would almost, you know, you'd be adding sort of, maybe there are sprays that can repel the dust, but I would say just basic standard cleaning methods are probably as effective than adding yet another spray. Yeah.
Hope your little one gets better, Liesl. And Leanne's being asking a really good question, saying, do pets make it worse? We have a dog and a daughter, age 4, who's asthmatic. Would obviously never get rid of daughter or beloved pooch, but curious. What do we need to know about pets when it comes to dust and dust mites and droppings?
So I think it's separate. So you would look at pet dander as a potential allergen, just like dust mites are an allergen or mold spores are an allergen. So there are so many centers, so many doctors that can do these allergy tests that can actually sort of show us whether a child or an adult has an allergy to that specific allergen. And then, but I have to say, even in the situation where an asthmatic child or a child with allergic rhinitis has a cat or dog allergy, that is not grounds to get rid of that cat or dog. The advice would simply be to try and keep them out of the bedroom and off the bed. That would be the only thing. But that's a separate discussion to dust mites. It doesn't, the two don't only come together if you or your child happen to be allergic to both.
Dr. Rania, can these kind of allergies, and let's talk about dust mites allergy in particular here, go away in time? Is it something you can outgrow?
So, yes. Definitely children, as they're going through rapid periods of growth, everything in their body seems to be slightly amplified when it comes to things like eczema, allergic rhinitis, even childhood asthma. And many of them do outgrow the tendencies. So the younger you are with these symptoms, the likelihood is that when you're older, you won't have them on a daily basis. But if you, for instance, walk into a very dusty room, then you may have some symptoms. So yes, adults can have them, but they probably won't happen as often or be as severe.
And can I ask them, what does treatment look like? We've talked about kind of lifestyle changes, making sure surfaces are clean and uncluttered. We're using, you know, mattress and duvet protectors, making sure we're not necessarily going for the most natural fillings. The synthetic ones tend to be a bit better for allergies. But what about treatment? What are you prescribing and how long does that need to go on for?
So it all depends on response to treatment. So as long as you've done as much as you can with the environment and continue to do that, so to add on to something, things you've said, is regular AC maintenance, making sure that even when you think the weather outside is absolutely gorgeous, there are parts of the world like here where opening the window for people who do have a high dust allergy is not always the best idea because you can get let in a lot more dust than you have to begin with. Sort of vacuum cleaning properly, using things like air purifiers with good HEPA filters, all of those things. Provided you've done all of that, and then the child or adult still has symptoms, the way we treat is we try to clean the nasal passages. So we do recommend regular saline nasal sprays because those can help the nasal passages remain clean. We sometimes do have to resort to oral antihistamines. So these are oral anti-allergy medications that reduce the release of histamine, which then causes the nasal blockages and nasal congestion and the mucus sort of production. And we will sometimes use nasal sprays, which are usually steroid or cortisone-based. Because that is the topical anti-inflammatory you would have to use on the nasal passages to reduce that swelling so that you can then breathe comfortably through your nose. And often these treatments do have to go on for weeks or months to be effective. And with some children and adults, they are done seasonally. So during the season when the symptoms are at their worst and then can be stopped in between.
Dr. Rania, thank you so much for your time and insights. As we say, far more common than we might realise, and always good to shine a light on something that people might be suffering from without even realising. What's the best way to get in touch with you in the clinic if anyone wants a consultation?
So number of the clinic is 0432 88820. Our website is circlecareclinic.com, and then I'm available on Instagram, Dr. Rania DXB.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Healthy Habits.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is our psychology hour. Now, loneliness, boredom, excitement, power. There are a number of reasons why a person might cheat on their partner, from the most malicious to the most careless of excuses. But one thing is for certain. When we think of a cheater, we often assume it is a man, rarely ever a woman. So why do women cheat in relationships? Is it for the same reasons as men, or is there more to it? Joining us on the line to discuss this and more is Dr. Thryer, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And at first glance, if two people break up and one of them cheated, there's a clear villain in that story to some people's mind, the cheater who broke a promise, who hurt somebody they supposedly loved. But there are always two sides to every story. Why did they cheat? What led them to that point? And there is a common misconception that it's only men who step out on their partners and that women are always faithful. But who are all these men cheating with exactly? Do men only cheat with single women? It does not add up. In the process of writing her book, The Secret Life of the Cheating Wife, author Alicia M. Walker learned that women cheat at the same rates as men, if not more. Turns out the cheating wife is not an anomaly. And depending on the age group and behaviour, some women cheat even more than the men. Dr. Thryer joining us on the line. How are you, Dr. T?
I'm good, Helen. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Having a good old day, I have to say. And I'm very intrigued to get your thoughts on this because you do a lot of marriage counselling at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And it's obviously tough to get data on this topic for obvious reasons. But when couples are coming into clinic, what is the split like between husband cheating and wife cheating if infidelity is the reason they're coming to see you?
Well, interestingly enough, I'm not going to say it's 50-50, but I would definitely say there is an higher percentage of men who cheat from what I've seen at the clinic, but it's not that much higher than the women.
And can I ask then, what trends and patterns have you noticed about the female partner being unfaithful since you've been in practice as a psychologist working with couples? Is it on the up as data seems to suggest elsewhere in the world?
No, I mean, from what I've seen is that it's really the same for the same reasons that men cheat.
Interesting. Mm. Okay. We are conditioned, I think, you know, media contributing to this, to think of men as cheaters and women as the ones who are cheated on. But the burden of infidelity always seems to fall on the man. You know, why is it harder for people to believe that women can cheat?
Well, in general, it's because, as you mentioned, we're actually conditioned to believe that women don't really have that level of sexuality and that women don't actually feel or experience that sense of And when I say, by the way, sexuality, I don't mean just in terms of physical sexuality. It's even emotional sexuality. It's psychological sexuality. So it's all of it together. And we're actually conditioned to not think of women in that way. We think of women as the nurturer. She's the giver. Whereas men, you know, with more of the kind of like that power in the back of their mind, it's kind of like, it's what I want, I get. But in essence, these myths, these ideas that women only cheat when they're emotionally unsatisfied, or women don't do one-night stands, or it's just long-term affairs, or they don't need as much sexual intimacy as men do, and things like that. I mean, all of these myths are completely incorrect, and they encourage and enable these this misconception that we have about women in general. And you know, historically, Freud had discussed a very interesting topic. I'm not sure I can say the word on air, so I will not.
Thank you very much. I do quite like living in the UAE, Dr. Freud.
Yes, so do I, Helen. But actually, for those of people that follow me on Instagram, they can see it. It's a specific complex where, because of the way that we look, different cultures are, there's a dichotomous kind of way of looking at women, either that pure kind of Madonna.
You're talking about
complex.
Yeah, the Madonna, and then the
yes.
other. Got
the
you.
Other.
Say
yes.
no more. I know what you're getting at.
Yes.
Can I ask you then, Dr. Soraya, if we feel like women don't cheat, there's that perception in society that they are the nurturer, the carer, the provider, the Madonna. Does that mean that when they are unfaithful and it's uncovered for whatever reason, that the woman, the wife, is judged more harshly than a man committing the same, you know, behavior would be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of the infidelities, you'll notice that even statistically speaking, we'll find that women are much, that find it easier to forgive their husbands when they cheat than it is the other way around, especially in specific cultures. So the more patriarchal cultures, usually the man will have a very difficult time and will usually resort to almost punitive reactions as a way to handle the infidelity.
Karen's been in touch saying, curious what Dr. Thryer thinks about couples who've got different ideas about what cheating is. My ex-husband thought that text messages and even photos were pretty innocent because there was no physical intimacy, though I considered him to be unfaithful. Really interesting point there. This has got to be a conversation that couples need to have about what constitutes infidelity within their relationship.
Of course, because ultimately, if you have two individuals that think differently about what infidelity is, then a line may very well be crossed. So it's very important to have that conversation beforehand so that you can at least align in that mindset. In essence, yes, usually what will happen is that men will think, you know, and this is not all men, but some men will think that you know, text messages, they're quite innocent. It's kind of like that flirtation that you might do at the office or with the barista behind the counter or whatever it is. But actually, it's much more than that because messages are far more effortful and they require time and they take usually time away from your actual partner. And they can be long-lived. Whereas for women, more often than not, they have the issues of course, not just of the sexual nature of their partners cheating on them, but also the emotional intimate mm-hmm. nature. Mm-hmm. So it's very important for couples to be aligned on how they define infidelity, because in essence, infidelity is about betrayal. And if at any moment a person feels betrayed, that's ultimately where the hurt, the pain, and the distrust comes in.
Messages coming in on this topic. LR saying it's a massive misconception that only men cheat. I sadly have been involved in a relationship of that nature. Well done for discussing. No Name saying it was my mum that was unfaithful to my dad, though I assumed the opposite and always blamed him for their marriage ending. We only found out after his death. He protected her and her behaviour until the end, putting our relationship with our mum ahead of his reputation. It has made me rethink everything. Dr. Thryer, I wanted to get your take on Esther Perel's theory. She is the New York-based therapist. Great podcasts, written numerous books, one about the state of affairs. And she claims there are two types of affairs, the wake-up affair and the break-up affair. What are your thoughts on that theory?
Well, actually, Esther Perel is by far one of my favorite individuals when it comes to any types of information about relationships. She is really a genius, I have to say.
She's amazing.
Yeah, she really is. And for a lot of people who have not actually seen her TED Talk about relationships and about cheating, there is definitely a lot of information there that could not only help give people a sense of awareness, but also a sense of understanding how to avoid such behavior as well. Mm-hmm. And you know what, Helen? I have to be honest. I completely forgot the question that you asked me.
You're having like a fangirl
moment. I am such a fangirl when it comes to her.
Well, I love her podcast because you basically get to listen in on a couple's counseling session with it. It's the ultimate kind of voyeuristic experience. It's just incredible. So I do recommend that. She says there's a wake-up affair and a breakup affair. So different types of infidelity. What are your thoughts on that?
So it's interesting because she talks about that in many of her podcasts. And in terms of, you know, an affair is just as much informative as it is destructive. Mm-hmm. So the affair itself can speak wonders to what is going on in the relationship. And actually, it's what's not going on in the relationship. And this is not to say that's true for all relationships, and she makes that very clear. There are a very small percentage of people that are you know, very selfish in nature, and without giving full-on diagnoses, but very selfish in nature, and they tend to cheat just because they can. But in essence, most relationships and most marriages may lead to infidelity if there's something missing within the relationship. And that is the wake-up type of betrayal. And that's what it is, because in essence, and this is something that's really hard for people to kind of accept, and that's why I'm trying to pick my words really well, but in essence, the breakup of a relationship is the responsibility of both parties. Mm-hmm. And that's very difficult. And that's something that, you know, when I work with couples, I try to get the couple that's been cheated on to understand that. And that initially can be very difficult because obviously the betrayal is really high in that moment, and there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of hurt. But and this is what she mentions, Esther, in her theory, is that the wake up is that there has been something that you're not contributing to the relationship, or maybe you haven't been listening to your partner, or maybe you haven't been engaging with your partner. There's something that's there that has caused the relationship to actually end, and that becomes your responsibility to take in. And thus, that could actually make the relationship even better than it ever was before.
No name on this one saying, my wife was having an emotional affair for 6 months with the intent on meeting up when I was away. Needless to say, photos were swapped. Anyway, I was about to leave her. She begged me to stay and said we could resolve everything through counselling. I decided a few months ago that I will leave her as I find I don't really love her anymore. Yes, due to the affair, but mostly because of her controlling nature, and life with her hasn't been the greatest over the last few years. We do have 2 sons, aged 9 and 5, and I don't want them to know the truth, but I'm also aware that I look like the bad guy because I'm the one leaving the family home. Any advice on how to explain things? That sounds hugely complicated. And I understand that, wanting to make the kids understand, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, just because he's the one leaving and it looks like he is perhaps accepting blame or is the guilty party, and I use guilty very loosely there, that they would assume that he is the contributing factor, I suppose. So how on earth can you navigate this with children in the equation?
You know, it's really difficult, obviously, because the kids are so young. But in essence, it's important to kind of discuss it with the partner that, look, for both of our sakes and for the sake of our children, it's important for us to come up with the same kind of story here, which is, both mommy and daddy feel that this is the best thing for both of us. So it becomes something where the kids see that it's a joint agreed upon decision, and that it's, and there's no difference in the way that the love is trickled down from them to the children, and it's not the children's fault. Obviously, the younger the ages, the more complicated that becomes, and the more of a conversation you need to have. As the kids get older, however, sometimes they're very well aware of what's going on, and they can see the distance within the family. And what I usually suggest is, if a child actually asks you, don't lie to them. And I know this is very hard for parents because they're like, okay, but then they're going to hate the other parent or the cheating parent. Well, not necessarily. If you kind of explain it in a way where the parents are discussing it from, like, this is both of our responsibility and this is kind of what happened, it gives a different feel to it, because if the children find out, like after the parents have either lied to them or hid from them, then usually that's far more traumatizing than if the conversation is had in a way that the children can then understand.
Dr. Rai, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. I'm sure COVID has been good for business on the marriage counselling front, unfortunately for the couples. But if people do want to reach out to you for some expert guidance, some mediation, what's the best way to get in touch?
Well, they can call us at 04-365-8498, or they can just visit our website at hricdubai.com.
Thank you very much, Dr. T. Speak soon.
Highlighting the achievements of local SMEs. This is Homegrown in the UAE with Servcorp.
And I'm very, very excited to introduce you to an exciting new hour, Homegrown in the UAE. It's an hour where we recognise the heroes of our economy, and often the unsung heroes, the small businesses, which have seen an interesting year, let's just say. We'll be getting to know them, how they started, how they failed, how they started again and grew their enterprise. Yes, I think we might be talking pivoting too. And to kick off the hour, let's give a shout out to some of your favourite small businesses. Like to say, Rumours got in touch saying, I really appreciate the ways in which individuals or smaller companies have been helping out those who've lost their jobs. That hair, though, in JLT, they have been offering haircuts to people who've lost their jobs and helping them feel a bit more comfortable applying for jobs. Absolutely brilliant. Today, we're featuring a rather extraordinary woman who's seen many ups and downs that's led her to establish her very own business, which is doing rather well indeed. Meet Shona Hinder, founder of Free Me. It's a family-run business that has its roots here in the UAE, and her product is a natural mosquito repellent. She started a business in April of last year, and within the first few weeks of its launch on Amazon, September 2020, the product was a sellout, receiving a wave of positive feedback from customers. But before she got to this point, she had to overcome a lot of hurdles in business and in life. Shona's joining us live on the line. How are you, Shona?
Hello, I'm fine. Thank you for that lovely introduction. Good afternoon.
Well, lovely to have you with us. And I'm very happy that you are our first guest on Homegrown in the UAE, because I think you're a brilliant example of what we're talking about. Those, the success stories, but also the real life lessons that you have learned to get you to this point. So can you tell us your UAE story? We've all got one. How did you end up here?
Yeah, I mean, in this lovely place. 2006 was when I moved over with my husband. We'd never been to Dubai before, and fortunately had the opportunity, you know, to us it was just where people went for luxurious holidays. And he had the opportunity. He was a scaffolding construction manager back in the UK. He came out here to do some project work. I was invited over for a weekend, which happened to be my birthday in December, and stood on the beach and just thought, yes, this would be a lovely place to live.
Dubai,
we had an 11-year-old. Quite easily. Just under the Burj Al Arab. A little bit different from Essex, which is where my roots are from. You know, love Essex, but this swung me a little bit, looking at the Burj Al Arab in December. So then our kids were 11 and 13, and we thought, you know what, you know, he had an opportunity to take a job here. You know, we should always seize these opportunities. So we did that, and we thought maybe we'd last 2 years. 14 years later, we still stayed.
It's a familiar story, Shona, yeah, it really is.
I know. And, you know, it just grows. The communities are amazing. The schools are amazing for the kids. I just took about a year off to settle them in. I mean, now they're like 25 and 28. My daughter's still here, but my son went off 7 years ago to live in Los Angeles and do his career out there. So, you know, we've been able to give our kids lots of opportunities, and our quality of life has been amazing since we lived here. But like you said, it doesn't come without its challenges. And after the first year of being here, I did take a little job in Barclays, just working in the HR department again for a couple of months, stayed for 3 years. And then I moved on to National Bank of Abu Dhabi just for a couple of weeks, and ended up staying there nearly 8 years.
I see a pattern emerging, Shona, here.
Yeah, I know. So it's just, you know what, when you get in somewhere and you just enjoy your job, and you know, you lend your strength to everything, and you learn lots of different things, you just end up moving on and you know, getting the job done, really. Mm-hmm. So that was what led me that way.
It's been interesting to chart that journey. As you say, you had a senior position working with top local international banks for nearly a decade. Did you enjoy that job? What were you getting from those positions?
Do you know what I did? I enjoyed it. There are times when it was tough. It was long hours and I had younger children then, so it was a big juggle of trying to get to the school run on time, trying to make sure, you know, lunches were done. And I know you get support here with people that can help you with housework and things, but it's still a challenge to try and juggle all that. But it's made easier by that, about the support. I've got a brilliant husband, you know, which we've been together for like 33 years. So he's been fantastic. The kids were fantastic as they were growing up. But even the circle of friends that I had within both the banks, that, you know, it was constant. That was where I drew my strengths from, all of what they did. You know, I didn't go to any university. I left school at 16, moved straight into a low-level advertising job. But I just say that I went to the University of Life because, to me, I've picked up my strengths as I've gone along. I've always asked for forgiveness, not permission. I've just had that go-getter type, determinated attitude. And, you know, my passion is what drove me forward. But I've always learned a lot from people that I've worked with and just, you know, picked up their strengths. So that's what I got from the corporate world and dealing with, you know, different things from doing big events for UA Nationals right through to making coffee for someone that's just joined the first day, you know, to make them feel happy and comfortable. So nothing, I've always had that approach. Nothing is too small and nothing too big. Every tiny little detail makes a difference, you know, whether it's someone's working life or whether it's to me, really. And it's what makes me feel good inside. So Shona, I hope that comes out.
It absolutely does. Shona, can I take you back, though, to July 2016 and something tragic happened that got you thinking about your life and ultimately your career choices? What was that?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I lost my dad through heart disease, and he had been having problems from when he was 50 for 20 years, but he'd had fantastic support for from the heart, you know, all the heart hospitals in the UK. And I was in the US at just before at the time with my son and with my husband and daughter. And we saw a small business that then developed into what I'll talk to you about next time. And I looked at it and thought that would be fantastic in Dubai. And, you know, but I go back to my job in National Abu Dhabi, driving from Dubai to Abu Dhabi every day. And that's what I did. So I did fly. We flew straight back here. But within a week, unfortunately, I run straight to the UK and lost my dad that week. So it just made me realise, you know, I was 50, he was 70, 20 years. Do I want to keep doing that job, you know, doing the drive? I love it, but I want to do something that I think is going to make a difference to me, other people, and bring something to Dubai that wasn't here, you know, which is how I went from HR and marketing into customizable flip-flops.
Quite the pivot. And the following year you did
a little bit different.
You did quit your job and decided to start that own business, and it was a flip-flop business. Tell us a little bit about that. Where did you see that gap in the market here in the UAE, Shona?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, everybody loves, I for one, you know, after the corporate working and the high heels and everything every day, and just, you know, life feels better in flip-flops was my motto anyway before flip-flops by me came around, flip-flops, just a pair of shorts or whatever, and just everything just feels better to me. Everything feels more comfortable. If you're comfortable in your shoes, it just makes you feel better, And I looked around Dubai, I looked around the UAE, and even globally, and all I could see, you got your big brand names of flip-flops, but I wanted something that people could design themselves if they wanted different colours, different straps, if they wanted to put their initials, their birthstones, you know, your kids' special memories of things. You could just make it come to life in a flip-flop, and I saw that in Vegas. In a mall. And I just, you know, when all this happened with Dad, I just started to explore where you got these sort of things from, where you could source materials from. I thought, I know printers, I use them at work. You know, I just looked at all the strengths that I'd had before, looked at all the connections I had, used Google, used all the amazing Facebook groups that I'm part of. And through pulling all different bits of information off there, that's how I think a year and a half it took me to bring flip-flops by me to life. And one of the things I wanted to do was give back something to the Heart Foundation for giving so much extra time to my dad. So personally, because of the rules and regulations around charities here that I was familiar with, personally, I just put back a little bit of what I was getting into the Heart Foundation and then shared that on my social medias just so that, you know, everybody knew that they were doing good as well as feeling good in their flip-flops. So That's how I moved to that bit.
So we talked about setting up the flip-flop company, and the business was doing well until the pandemic started, Shona. You were totally blindsided, like many companies in the region, by the virus. Yeah. What happened and how did you cope?
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, it was, as I say, it was a difficult decision giving up the corporate salary, you know, at that time to go into flip-flops by me. But it was, you know, I was just inspired by what I'd seen in Vegas and wanted it to happen. So I kept going with that. I was moving into doing some corporate deals, but unfortunately I was a little bit led by just passion and love, and the balance sheet and that sort of got put aside because one thing, I wasn't familiar with that, and I just ran along with the passion of doing kids' parties and, you know, doing what I loved. So when it came to the beginning of this year, I was lucky enough to get some opportunities in a mall and in a hotel to set up kiosks. That was in January, February time, and then bang, March hit us, where the two kiosks that I'd open, obviously the hotel was closed and the mall was closed. So that, like you say, left me at, oh, okay, what do I do? I've got these kiosks, I've got no staff to go to them. What do I do from here? So that was when I just picked up what I'd been researching for the last year or so, because I've had and I know many people across the groups I look at, my friends here, have a problem with mosquitoes. Especially this time of the year, we've all tried to look for natural remedies. You know, we'd scrape around in different places trying to find them. Everything's full of chemicals. All I kept seeing was that, and I thought, right, I'm going to use this time now. If I've done flip-flops, I can make this happen. So that's what I did. I started to research more about what the actual problem is with mosquitoes. What do they go for? Why are plugins not working? Why are wristbands not working? And through the research that I'd done, it just showed that body odor, natural body odor, is the one thing that attracts mosquitoes. So, okay, if I can make flip-flops happen, I can go and make a natural product happen and get it made here in the UAE so that, you know, it's easy for me to supply it as well. So that's what I did. I just used all of COVID time to do research, to talk to the factory, to import a couple of oils that we needed, to make sure I was using organic products. I wanted, I have an emphasis on being transparent with customers. I wanted to clearly label everything. I wanted to make sure I got all the right Dubai municipality approvals. And I wanted to solve a problem. You know, my flip-flops were a nice to have, whereas mosquito repellent is a need to have. So I just had to park everything going on with flip-flops by me, focus on what I thought could, you know, make a difference. And that was all going really well with the development stages of it, with my husband in a really secure job, until a few weeks ago when he got noticed, like a lot of people did, that his job is up. So this has been this is unfamiliar to us. In 33 years we've been together, never has that happened. So do you know what? It's just like, right, what can we do here? Because, you know, it's very true when people say your savings save you. Mm-hmm. But that's a big thing that I've learned now. So what we were going to use, you know, what you, like everybody, you rely on two salaries, you have an income, you have outgoings to balance everything. I thought, right, how do I do this? I'm on the brink of the items gone on Amazon. You know, it goes on Kipson's. It's everyone's loving it. It's a good product. How do I make this happen? So it's just, you know, positivity, persistence, my perspective on things, perseverance, everything you can imagine. I know it's lots of P's, determination. I've had to be resilient. There's so many things that I've had to try and put into play, apart from being Shona as a person and a mum and a wife as well. It is. There's many difficult decisions, but it's just, you know, the whole COVID pandemic, it's just been a time where you just have to look at different avenues, look at around you. You know, when I talk about perspective, about, you know, people losing people early in life, loved ones, things going on bad. I'm a great believer in looking at positive and trying to make things work. And just keep going, half glass, you know, glass half full, is it, they say, all the time. And I won't change from that. So it's, you know, that's a message I'd give to people. If you've got something that you want to do, you know, pull on the strengths of people around you, go forward and make it happen. Because if you don't have a go, you can't go back and do it again, you know, in years' time. So.
Well,
that's where I am at the moment.
The product's doing incredibly well. And I would like to say, on a personal basis, as someone who mosquitoes absolutely love to eat alive, is it weird to be looking forward to mosquito season so I can get the free me out? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. But, no, when I see the mosquitoes now, it's yes. And I shouldn't be like that. Of course I shouldn't.
It's good for sales,
in fact, I've got a farm at home.
But it does just go to show that the best businesses are there to solve a problem. And that's exactly what you've been doing with this mosquito repellent.
Exactly.
Shona, thank you so much for your time. Wishing you and your husband, the whole family, all the very, very best throughout the rest of the year.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And it's Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer. Tune in from Sunday, 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. We'll be talking family matters, children's health, education, parenting and more. See you then.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.